Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller. Together we are learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Daf Chaf Hei Amud Aleph, that's 25a, and we are about two-thirds of the way down the page in the third, three lines up in the skinny lines, or the medium skinny lines. And we're telling stories about the Amoraim and their funerals. We are still here dealing with the funeral of Rav Huna. We told a story about the sages tearing Kriya, or they didn't tear Kriya, and Abai told them that they should tear Kriya for him. And then we told a story about how they couldn't get the mitah, the bier, the funeral bier, out of the house, and they tried a number of different ways, and finally they had to demolish the doorway to carry him out. And we told a story about the hesped of Rav Huna, in which he said that he was so great that he was worthy of having the divine spirit resting upon him. Okay, now Rav Huna passed away in Bavel, but they took his body, which was a common practice, to the land of Israel for burial. So ki askua lehatam, when they arrived there, that is in the land of Israel, amrule l'Rabbi Ami l'Rabbi Asi, it was told to Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi, who were the head rabbis at that time, and they were students of Rav Huna, but they had traveled from Bavel to the land of Israel in order to become rabbis of the community in Israel. So they heard that he was coming, Rav Huna ate, that Rav Huna had come. Amru, they said, ki havinan hatam, when we were there, that is in Bavel, lo havalan l'daluye reshin minei, we were not able to lift our heads from him. That is, he's so much greater than us that we had to bow our heads out of respect to him, and we weren't able to be leaders in our own right. We had to be his students. Hashta atinan hacha, and now he's going to come here. Now, this does sound a little bit, I don't know what the right word is. It doesn't sound becoming for the two rabbis. It sounds as if they were like, why is he invading our territory? Why is he coming to take away our power? And I don't know if that's the right way to read it. I mean, it doesn't sound great, but maybe that's not the way to read it. Maybe they were just feeling like maybe they felt that they were wondering, why would he leave Bavel? Because he was an important teacher of Torah there, and he would come here. We're able to handle this. This is a good place for us to use our powers. Why does he want to come here and take over this particular area when he's needed in other places? Maybe that's a way of reading it. Ata Batrain, other messenger came afterwards, and Amru Luhu, and he said to them, Aronoba, his coffin has come. They thought he was coming alive, but now they learned, they understood that he was coming dead. So their original assumption was wrong. So Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi nafuk. So Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi went out to meet the coffin and to participate in the levaya. Rabbi Ila and Rabbi Chanina lo nafuk. But two other rabbis did not go out to greet the coffin and participate in the levaya. Why not? So and Ika de Amri Rabbi Ila nafak. Rabbi Chanina lo nafak. Some say that Rabbi Ila went out and Rabbi Chanina didn't go out. So dinafak my time, eh? Those who went out to greet the coffin, what was their reasoning? Ditanya, as we learn in a Braita, Aron ha'over mimakom l'makom, a coffin carrying a dead body that moves from one place to another, in this case from Bavel to the land of Israel. So it is quite a bit of time after the person has died, because they had to all the traveling time. Omdim alav b'shura, nonetheless, you form two rows of mourners, that the two rows of comforters that the mourners walk through, and they comfort them as they walk through the rows. V'omrim alav birkat avelim, and you do say to the mourners, that you give them the blessing of the mourners, which is given in the courtyard of the synagogue. V'tanchumi avelim, and you also comfort them using the formula for comforting, you know, min hashamayim tenachamu, or hamakom yinachem, you give them as well. So based on that braita, those people went out because they had the obligation to do these things, to create the shura and to say the bracha and to be menachem. Delo nafak mai taima, those who didn't go out, what was their reason for not going out? Ditanya, as we learn in a braita, arona over mi makom makom, it's almost the same braita, a coffin that goes from one place to another place. You don't form the shura, you don't give the blessing of the avelim, and you don't give the formula of consolation. So basically, you have a braita here that has two versions that completely contradict each other. So that's what the Gemara says. Kashyan ahadate. These are contradictory one to the other. How will we resolve it? What's the true girsa of the braisa? So the Gemara harmonizes them and says, lo kasha is no kasha. They apply to two different cases. Kan sheshildo kayemet, the case when you do go out and do form the shura and give the blessing, etc., is when his spine is intact. Or in other words, when the body is still looks like a body, it has not decomposed. Kan b'she'en shel do kayemet, but when the body has decomposed, you do not have to go out and form the shura. It's too late already. So the thing is, in this case, it seems clear that the body was still intact. So the ones who went out were doing the correct thing. So that's what they asked. Rav Huna shel do kayemet hava. Rav Huna had not, his body had not yet decomposed, so they should have gone out. So the Gemara answers, "Delo nafak lo siyamua kamei." Those who didn't go out didn't get the full story. And as we saw, there was some problem with information flow here, meaning when they originally got the message that Rav Huna was coming, they thought he was alive, and then they heard he was dead. So there were some games of telephone going on here, and those rabbis who didn't go out to greet the Aron didn't get the full message, and perhaps they thought that this was a case where the body had already decomposed, and that's why they didn't go out. Had they known, the proper thing to do would have been to go out as Rav Ami and Rav Asi did. Okay, the next step of the story, now that they have brought him, they've brought the bier of Rav Huna to Israel, now they had to ask the question, Amrei, they said, Hecha Ninche, where shall we bury him? Where shall we lay him to rest? Obviously, he's an important personage, and he needs to be put in a makom kavod, you know, has to be given an honorable place. But where should that be? So they said, Rav Huna rebates Torah b'Yisrael. Rav Huna was someone who was marbits Torah. He proliferated and disseminated and promulgated Torah in the land of Israel. Rabbi Chiya rebates Torah b'Yisrael, and Rabbi Chiya was also a marbits Torah. Have man ma'ayale. So, oh, sorry, that's the next part of the story. But so they said these two rabbis were both Marbitzei Torah. Let's put them together. So one is assuming here, it's a whole question that we'll have to ask historically, that Rav Chiya had already passed away. Tosos raises a question about this, but let's assume that Rav Chiya had passed away. And so then Rav Huna was buried next to Rav Chiya as a sign of kavod to them both, that they belong together as Marbitzei Torah. So the next question they asked was, Have man ma'ayale, who will take him up to bury him there. Now, these burials were not done in this kind of cemeteries that we have today. They were done in caves. So at the mouth of the cave, you had a large stone that would be rolled aside. You would go into the cave, and there was a burial complex in there. And in the burial complex, on the sides of it, there were different, let's say, beds or shelves in which bodies could be placed. And then in the middle was a hole where when the bodies had fully decomposed and there were only bones left, the bones could be disinterred or moved from the shelves and put into the hole where they would, go down below, and that's where they would be their final resting place. And that would make room in the crypt for additional family members to be buried there later. So that's the question of who was going to go into the crypt and put his body on, in the proper place. Okay, I lost the place. Okay, here I'm ILA. We are now 2, 4, 6, 8 lines from the bottom. Amar la ruhu Rav Chaga. So Rav Chaga said, and in some Gemaras he's listed as Rav Chagai, Ana ma'ail nale, I will bring him up. Why? Why am I ra'ui to do this? To okamte l'talmudai kiavina bar tamnesrei, that I completed the entire Talmud by the time I was 18, bar tamnesrei srei shnin, by the time I was 18 years old. Velochazi li keri, and I had never had an ejaculation. I had never seen semen before in my life. So either this means that he was just a pure person and he had never you know, had any ejaculations, or it means that he had not yet married, meaning he was waiting until the longest time. He wanted to continue his studies as long as he could until he got married, and he was completely devoted to Torah and had not yet thought about anything else in life. Umashma le kameh, and I learned in front of him, so I know his Torah. V'yadei be'uvdei, and I know his avoda, or the reality of his life. As an example, he shared a piece of information that you would only know if you were very, very close to someone, and you knew their piety. The yom achad, one day, itzhapchilei retzua de tefillin, the strap of his tefillin got turned around. V'yati v'aleha arba in tanita, and he was so upset about it that he sat for 40 fast days. These were probably partial fast days that he didn't finish completely. 40 fast days because his tefillin strap got turned around. Now, it's true that there is a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai that tefillin straps should have the black part of them up and the unfinished part down. But it seems like something, it's certainly not required by the halacha. And even by minhag, to even fast one day if you did it wrong one day. But this was an area of emphasis for him. And as a chassid, you know, lifni mishur tadin, above and beyond the letter of the law, he took it very seriously. Some people say, that's how Rashi reads it, that one of his tefillin straps got turned around so that the black was down. Another way to read it, which is what Rashi says in the Ksav Yad, is that, you know, the shin that was supposed to be formed on his arm, on the tefillin, got turned around instead, that it was the shin, and that he was so upset about it because he felt like he had erased Hashem's name in some way. So anyway, Rav Chagai reports this story as a way of saying that he was very close to Rav Huna, and he feels that he would be willing to take the responsibility of doing the interment. So he went up into the crypt, and what he found there was that this was the crypt of Rav Chisda, if you remember. Wait, not Rav Chisda. Rav Chia. This was the crypt of Rav Chia. So when he got there, he saw that Havagane Yehuda Mimine, that Rav Chia's son Yehuda was interred on the shelf that was to his right, Mimine Davua, to the right of his father. V'chizkia, and Rav Chia's son Chizkia Mismale was buried in the shelf to his left. So there was presumably both the spots next to Rabbi Chia were already taken already. So now the Gemara tells the story in a slightly fanciful way, but there is a way of describing it in a less fanciful way. We'll do both as we go. Amar le Yehuda l'chizkia, in the words of the Gemara of the Agarta here, the bones of Yehuda said to the bones of Chizkia, kum miduchtech, get up out of your spot. You move. Right, because Yehuda was the older son, I guess, and Chizkiah was the younger son. So he told his younger brother, "You get up and make room for this holy rabbi to be buried here." Delav orach ara, dekaim Rav Huna. That it's not derech eretz to let Rav Huna stand there while they try to figure out what's going on. So he's basically saying, get up, make room. The word Orach Ara is the Aramaic for what we call Derech Eretz. And I said to Kaim Rav Huna that Rav Huna should be standing there. So the non-fantastical way to read this is that Rav Chaga had to make a decision about which bones to take off the shelf and put into the hole in the ground, and he chose to take Chizkiah's bones. Bahade Dekayim, as Chizkiah got up, or as Rav Chagai was moving Chizkiah's bones, kam Bahade Amuda Denura. It went up with him a pillar of fire. And the pillar of fire represents the sacredness of the space and the danger of impugning the kavod of Rav Chia. Chazia Rav Chaga. Rav Chaga saw the pillar of flame that was going up. Ivit, he became terrified. He became very scared. Zakfe la Arone. So what he did instead of completing the job is he turned the coffin or the bier of Rav Huna. He stood it up straight on the ground. Venafak, and he ran out. He went out. So instead of actually interring Rav Huna on one of the shelves in the crypt, he just left him there standing in the middle of the room. Now, according to some commentators, this is the... we'll see in 1 second. V'nafak ata, and he went from there. V'haidelo i'anish, and how is it that he didn't get hurt by this pillar of flame? Anish i'anish, how did he not get hurt by this pillar of flame? Mishum tesakve la'aron and Rav Huna, because he had stood up the ark of the coffin of Rav Huna. So some commentators say that he would have gotten burned, but he was standing behind the aron of Rav Huna, and therefore the flame hit the aron and didn't hit him. I would say that another way to read it is that he found a way of honoring Rav Huna without disrespecting Chizkiah. Apparently, when he disrespected Chizkiah, who was the son of Rav Chia, by moving his bones at that time in order to make room for Rav Huna, that was respectful to Rav Huna, but not to Chizkiah. So there was a consequence of that, of the pillar of flame. Rav Chia's spirit was upset, or Hashem was upset on behalf of Rav Chia. So instead of disinterring any of either Rav Chia or any of his children by standing up the Aron in the middle of the crypt, he showed respect to both Rav Huna and to the rest of the family, and therefore he was not punished, and he was able to get out of there alive. We will stop there. Three lines from the... Actually, you know what? We'll go just a little further. We'll tell one other story here. Kinach nafshi d'Rav Chisda. When Rav Chisda passed away, Savor lo'otave sefer Torah apuria. They also wanted to put a Torah on his bier, on his bed. Amr lehu Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak said, Milta de la Rabbi lo sirale. This was a matter that his master did not hold with when he was alive. Ana nikom ne'avidle. Now we'll do it for him when he's dead. It's a very similar story to what we had above about Rav Huna, but this time about Rav Chisda. And that's the end of that part of the story. But then, apparently, when Rav Chisda passed away, as we learned above, when a Rav passes away, you're supposed to tear Kriya, so they tore Kriya. So after they buried him, Savur Delola Mishlal Kra'ayhu, they reasoned that they should not fix the rips. So there's a whole halacha, which we'll get to on the next daf in Chaf Vav, about when you're allowed to repair the torn clothing. And there are different ways of repairing it. There's a nice way to repair it and a not nice way to repair it. So lemishlal is to create a stitching that's not a permanent stitching. It's just a ladder stitching to fix it up a little. So they thought to themselves, we just tore Kriya, now we buried our Rebbe. Perhaps we should not repair the Kriya right now. We should wait until, who knows, until after at least Shiva, or at least until maybe after Shloshim, to repair them. Amar luhu Rabbi Yitzchak bar Ami. So Rabbi Yitzchak bar Ami changed that. He convinced them otherwise by telling them the following teaching. Chacham, a wise man, kevan shech ziru peneihem me'achori hamita, as soon as you turn away from burying him, from the bed on which he's being buried, sholin, you're allowed to repair the tears in the clothing. In other words, it's true that you have to tear your clothes for a chacham, but as opposed to a relative in which you have to observe a period of mourning for the relative by not repairing the torn clothing, you have to wear the torn clothing. In the case of a chacham, the tearing only relates specifically to the tearing itself. And as soon as the burial is done, you're no longer considered a mourner for that chacham, and therefore you may already repair your torn clothing. We'll stop there on the last line of Chaf Hamad Aleph. Have a wonderful day.